The Courage to Lead, episode 44.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com.
Hey, Coach Arlen here. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you guys are having a great week. I'm having a good week and I'm looking forward to this particular interview. I get to introduce you to my half brother-in-law. Is that how he's, I guess that's my good friend, Vincent Mezzatesta. Vincent Mezzatesta is the president of Next Level Strategies, Inc., a medical office business practice consultancy based in New York. Vincent is an Army veteran. He served 2 years active duty and 6 years reserve duty as a nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons specialist and had a subspecialty as a medic. Prior to starting his consultancy, Vincent worked for Clean Earth, Inc., a hazardous waste facility doing compliance. He also worked in IT and for a short time owned a landscaping company with his ex-brother-in-laws. Vincent started as a medical assistant, and he realized that while doctors, like most professionals, are brilliant at what they do, they're not always savvy when it comes to managing their business. Vincent started his consultancy on the side. His accountant warned that Vincent was making too much money on 1099 and suggested that he incorporate to take advantage of the corporate benefits, and his consultancy, Next Level Strategies, was launched. So fortunately, Vincent worked for someone who wanted to see him thrive. That physician referred Vincent to his colleagues, who in turn referred Vincent to their colleagues, and that's how his business has grown. Vincent credits his prior military experience and his knack for being disciplined for his success with Next Level Strategies. Vincent says, I found that doctors who are extremely smart when it comes to diagnosing a person's medical problems are extremely inefficient at running a medical practice. He points to the amount of compliance required in the medical field as one of the reasons his business has thrived. Vincent lives in Brooklyn, New York with his wife and 4 daughters. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Alan.
That's awesome. I'm glad you could be on here, man. So
Yeah, me too.
Biological and medical are biological and nuclear and chemical. That sounds scary to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's nowadays they call it CBRN, which is the term that the military uses. When I was in, they called it NBC, Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Weapons Specialty. Okay. But nowadays, they call it CBRN. What they do is they teach our troops to best protect themselves against any of those kind of attacks.
Okay. So you are actually looking out for the guys. You weren't actually carrying the weapons and throwing things at people and stuff like
that. No.
Okay.
No, there was no carrying weapons. We were protecting people. We were protecting our own troops. Okay. We would run scenarios in different cities and different states for different government agencies so that the city themselves can protect themselves best. And we would teach local police departments and law enforcement agencies how they could teach their police officers and firemen and EMS to best protect themselves. It's a lot of training.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right. Well, we'll definitely get more into that. Want to talk about that experience. Want to talk about your how you started your consultancy and how it's growing. And yeah, got a lot of good stuff to talk about. But before we get started, Vincent, I have 10 questions that I ask all of my guests. These are the questions made famous on the television show Inside the Actor's Studio, where James Lipton asks these questions of all of his guests. And I figure if they're good enough for the Hollywood elite, they're certainly good enough for my guests. So, Vincent, if you're ready, I've got 10 questions for you.
Let's dive right in.
All right. Question number one, what is your favorite word?
Wow.
Cool. What is your least favorite word?
Can't.
Yes. What turns you on?
Punctuality.
Okay. What turns you off?
Laziness.
Okay. Awesome. What sound or noise do you love?
My favorite sound in the whole world is birds chirping in the morning.
Nice. And what sound or noise do you hate?
Car horns.
All right. Vincent, what is your favorite curse word?
Foobar. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Google it. Question A, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
This was a tough one. And if, I mean, I would, the profession I would love to do would be an astronaut, but I don't think that's happening at this age. I'm 40 years old, so.
You never know.
You never know.
What profession would you not like to do?
Man, with all respect, I don't know if I could be a police officer. They have it so hard. They have the hardest job in the world.
Yeah, these days especially.
These days. It's so tough. I don't know if I could do it.
Yeah. All right. 10. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome home.
Welcome home. Good job. All right. Vincent, we're going to talk more about your background, your Army experience. Thank you again for your service. We're going to talk about that, how you started your consultancy and kind of where you're going from here. All right. We'll get all to that in just a minute. So stick with us.
Imagine having a trusted group of CEOs at your disposal. Imagine having your very own peer advisory team who could work you through the problems and questions in your business before you had to make those difficult decisions. Imagine you had a group of advisors that had your back and met for the sole purpose of making you successful in your business. What would you be able to accomplish then? Well, you don't have to imagine anymore. You can have that and more when you join my Business Success Mastermind Group. Join my Business Success Mastermind Group today. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com/mastermind.
All right. And we are back with my guest, Vincent Mezzatesta. Vincent, thanks again for being on the podcast. Been looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too.
So you mentioned in your bio, the information you sent to me and stuff that, you're very disciplined. You start your day at 5:30. Tell me what that's like.
Yeah, that's right. Every day, no negotiation, Saturday, Sunday, I'm up at 5:30.
7 days a week, 5:30. What do you do?
7 days a week. I get dressed and head to the gym. Physical fitness is a really big thing for me. I'm not a bodybuilder or anything like that. But I do find that it kind of sets me straight for the day. It gives me my goals, gives me my bearings, and it's just a routine that I have set, and it has helped me tremendously.
Yeah. And routines are important. A lot of people don't have routines. I think they really should look into it. So have you always been that disciplined, or did the Army kind of get you started?
No, definitely not. Yeah. Growing up as a child, I was cutting school and, you know, acting out and doing stupid stuff. Yeah. And the military really put a hold on me. It really changed my life. I was 17 years old when I joined. My parents had to sign me in. I spent my 18th birthday in Fort McClellan, Alabama, in boot camp. And I think without the military, I would not be the person I am today.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Wow. And so tell me about your time in the Army. Tell me about the nuclear chemical weapons specialist. What all did you do?
So when you're a nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons specialist, a lot of it is training others, teaching others how to protect themselves. And not only training others, but training for an incident that might ever happen.
Okay.
It's conditioning over and over, training over and over, different kind of scenarios. Different kind of weapons, chemical weapons, nuclear weapons, biological weapons, and different treatments for each one.
Okay. You're saying that there's a lot of meteorological type stuff that you had to do, right? Tell me about one of the scenarios.
So there's something called a chemical downwind message. And if there were an attack of any sort, nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons, this chemical downwind message would follow the cloud or plume, whatever it might be. And what you would do is you would warn an area before that plume got to them so that they could leave or evacuate accordingly based on your determination of where this attack is going to.
Okay, so you're running models, kind of like the weather map, to see where that's going.
That's right. You're running models based on wind speed, temperature, and a whole bunch of different variables, a lot smarter than I am. We use a computer to do it. We just punch in the numbers and it gives us a message and then we put out the warnings.
Okay. Interesting. So that wasn't, I mean, was that something that you had an interest in, or did you, they just select you and randomly off you go?
So you take an ASVAB test when you join the military, and based on that, the military gives you options. What could possibly be in the realm of your ability based on an ASVAB test? And if you don't know what an ASVAB test is, it's a basic determination of your total skills. And what they test everything, engineering skills, math skills, reading skills, a slew of skills they test on this one test. Yeah. And you get a score, and then you're grouped into different abilities. And for what I had scored, this was the best option that I found. Nice. And decided to go for it. Plus, they gave me a like $5,000 signing bonus to do it.
Oh, there you go. I'm sure that helped too.
That helped. That helped make the decision. At 17 years old, you think $5,000 is a million.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then you, after you got out of the Army and stuff, you tried different things, right? You went to work at the one chemical waste facility.
Yep.
That must have been scary too.
Yeah, you know, I was in, I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure you've been up here. You know New Jersey, mm-hmm. The smell that comes out of New Jersey right when you land in Newark, which is where I kind of worked. You smell the chemicals and the chemical plants all around the area. And I worked at a chemical plant around there. And Clean Earth, what they did was they took remediated material, like from a facility that was in bad shape, and brought it to their facility and either cleaned or disposed of it. But a lot of the material was really bad stuff over the years of like contamination of gasoline, paints, and like some really, really bad stuff. And I did compliance there, which I was like a health and safety manager for the facility. I handled compliance, and it was a lot of testing, air testing, quality testing of the soil, sending stuff out to labs and different things like that. Just a lot of exposure. Yeah. And after a while, it was just got too hairy.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff scares me because you just never know what you're touching.
No,
right.
And you really don't. And you could be protected. You could wear the best equipment, and it's just scary.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So take me to the point where you started working for the medical office. You were a medical assistant. What kind of things did you do?
So yeah, as a medical assistant, I had a medical background because in the military, I had a subspecialty of a medic. So I was already experienced in the medical field. I was used to treating patients. I was already certified EMT. So walking into the medical field as a medical assistant, basically what we did was as a medical assistant, brought patients in from the waiting room, took a history, took blood pressures, drew blood work, different kind of things like that, and then prepped the doctor to know exactly what's going on with this patient. So we would take the history, write everything down, get all the information, bring it to the physician, brief the physician, hey, we have a patient in the room. This is the problem, A, B, C, and D. Now he has an introduction. He's not going in there blind.
Right.
And he sees the patient, makes his diagnosis, and moves on.
Nice. Yeah. And so then you started helping out in other areas, right?
Sure. Yeah, so in doing this, I've noticed that there was a lot of insufficiencies with the process that was happening. Patients would come in and there would be no information on this patient until one of the medical assistants wrote it. And if the medical assistant wasn't familiar enough with the information that's being put in, the doctor wouldn't have the right tools to be able to see this patient. Okay. And a lot of it was handwritten stuff, and you know, different people's handwriting get confusing over time. Sure. And so what I had approached the physician with was an idea that we used in the military, which was tablets, and being able to click off problems with the patient instead of writing something down. click it off. So the doctor, when he comes in, he could see a clear check. This is what's the problem here. This is what the patient has. He has diabetes, high blood pressure. He's on these medications in a clear form. And that seemed to work. The physician really loved the idea. It was implemented. And that was the start of, hey, this guy might be able to, you know some stuff that's going on here.
Absolutely. Well, no, anytime you can bring something like that into, you know, a business that isn't using it, you know, like I said, the efficiencies and the patient care, I'm sure went up because they had accurate information from that point.
Sure.
Nice. And so then you started working with other businesses doing similar things, kind of consulting with them.
So yeah, the physician that I was working for moved me up from medical assistant to office manager within the year or so. After that, he had a colleague of his that was opening up an ambulatory surgery center. The colleague was having a really hard time opening up. It was 3 years in the process. Wow. And they had someone already working on the state level consulting, doing all the paperwork and all of that stuff that I didn't really understand. But they needed on the inside to get the office together and ready to go for the state inspection, which the physician I worked for referred me out to them. Nice. And it was history from then. They hired me. I got their facility up and running. They were beyond grateful because they were just pumping out money.
Yeah.
What it costs for rent in downtown Brooklyn to hold a facility with no work going on is insane. I mean,
wow.
They just had no money coming in and money bleeding out.
Yeah.
So they were grateful.
You were able to get them up and running.
Get them up and running. Within 6 to 7 months, they had patients in the door and they were grateful. They referred me to their colleagues and
the rest is history.
The rest is history.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, and we talked about this earlier. I know somebody who does essentially the same thing for legal offices. You know, lawyers are trained to be lawyers, but they're not trained on how to run a legal practice. Right?
Right.
The working with the employees, the HR, and all that other stuff.
That's right.
With the physicians, with the doctor's offices, what are there common errors that you see or common problems that you come across? What is it that they struggle with?
So physicians are geniuses. These people are the, you know, smartest of smart. And I usually deal with specialists. Really not even like your regular local primary doctor. I'm dealing with neurologists, pain management physicians, spine doctors. These people are really, really, really smart people. And what they seem to miss out on is the regular leadership skills that it takes to run an office and to run the staff in the office. They neglect the fact that these people that are running, that are in your office, are the face of your business.
Yeah,
the people are happy when they see a physician and they're a great physician. But if you have a front desk that's inefficient, the person is not going to come back for a second visit. Sure. They're just not going to come back if they see a sloppy office or a inefficient staffing. Doesn't matter how good the physician is, you're going to lose patients.
Yeah, the intake process, if it's not, you know, streamlined and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, we've all been frustrated at times.
Yeah. We've been there sitting in the office for 2 hours. You're frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that one of the things you help them do, is put their processes in place?
Yeah, definitely. Setting up an office includes coaching the physician themselves on how, I'm not going to be there forever. I'm only here for a short period of time. I'm going to train that physician to be able to have his office up and running and hopefully give him the tools he needs so that he understands what is required of this. Awesome. Because a lot of times they lack that. They lack the, I don't know what I would call it, maybe emotional side of employees.
Okay.
And there's a lot to deal with when it comes to employees. And that's where leadership training comes in big time for physicians.
Absolutely. Yeah, because how they engage their employees, right? If they get frustrated easily, they yell at the employees, they lose good employees, right?
Most definitely.
Teaching them, yeah, how to do it. And having those processes documented to where if they, because I'm sure the turnover is pretty high in medical, you know, the front office.
Definitely. For
training those new people coming in has got to be a struggle too.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is.
Yeah. And so you started your business. How many different offices are you working with right now?
Right now, I'm working with 3 different offices.
Awesome. And it's just you right now, right?
It's just me.
Wow.
I got all the hats piled up this year.
But since you're so disciplined, I'm sure you're getting it all knocked out. That's good. And I remember reading you like to learn.
I love to learn.
You're a learner.
I didn't as a child.
No?
As a young man in high school and early education, I was not attentive. I was not. But nowadays, I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. I love to read.
Do you listen to books on tape and stuff like that during your exercise in the morning?
I don't. I prefer a book in my hand.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of a tablet. I'm not a fan of, you know, honestly, I never picked up a Kindle. I've always gotten the hardcover book and I always have one with me wherever I go, whatever I'm doing. There's always a book with me. There's one in my car. There's one in here. There's always a book.
Yeah. See, at my age, the Kindle is good because you can zoom in on the, you know, the letters. But my Kindle, it's stuffed. I've got books. I mean, everything. History. I've got police dramas. I've got business type books. Everything. What are you reading currently?
Currently, I'm reading Contagious.
Ooh, interesting.
So basically, what the book is about is what makes something contagious. How something like a simple steak or a Philly cheesesteak could be what people around the block wanting to get it. Everyone sells a Philly cheesesteak. You can get a Philly cheesesteak. You don't have to go to Philly for a Philly cheesesteak. Right. But what makes a Philly cheesesteak at your place so contagious?
Interesting.
And one of the chapters in the book talk specifically about this Philly cheesesteak, and someone made $100 Philly cheesesteak.
Wow.
I might say, why? Why would I make $100 Philly cheesesteak? So they put out on social media that there's $100 Philly cheesesteak. They had a line down the block.
I bet.
But meanwhile, the pizzeria on the corner that sells a $5 Philly cheesesteak can't sell it. It caused a buzz and it caused all this hype.
Interesting.
That people flooded to it and paid $100 for a cheesesteak.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I tell the story. A friend of mine, when we were growing up, we were into dirt bikes.
Right.
And he had an old dirt bike he wanted to sell and to buy the new one. And so he put it up, you know, for sale, $200, something like that. No offers whatsoever. His dad goes, let me try. And so his dad listed out everything they had done to the bike, all of the bells and whistles, all the things they added to it, the color, the this, the that. Long list of everything they'd done to the bike, $1,500, and it sold in 2 days.
Wow.
But it is. It's just the marketing of it, right? Putting that information out.
Right.
That's cool.
That's what it turns out to be. Good stuff. Yeah, that's what I'm reading now.
Yeah. Very nice.
Good book.
So you don't have anybody working for you right now
at nope.
Next Level Strategies. Did you have people under your command when you were in the Army?
I was a sergeant in the Army.
Okay.
I was a line leader. In a platoon, you have multiple lines. I was a line leader.
Okay.
In a platoon.
Okay. And then when you were working at Clean Earth, did you have some folks working for you there?
I was a health and safety manager and I had one person under me.
Okay. So if I was to bump into any of these people that you worked for or worked with in the past, if I was to bump into them today and ask them, what do you think they'd say if I asked them what type of leader you were? What kind of leader would you say you are?
Fair, but strict.
Strict.
Okay. I tend to follow the rules without any blurring, which you know, could be a little bit of a downfall for me. Just because I stick to the game plan. I'm not really good at going outside of the box. I'm trying to learn how to do that.
But when it comes to compliance, you can't go outside the box very much.
No.
That box is there for a reason.
That's right. Well, that's right. That's why I excel in the area that I excel, is because this is the rule. This is what has to be done. And that's just it.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's, you know, some governing body outside.
That's fair.
They have control of it. You don't. If it's something within the office, fine. You know, this type of coffee rather than that, this type of paperwork rather than that. Those are things you can do. But if it's some compliance issue, you have to stick to those.
That's right.
Yeah. So yeah, I can see how your background could definitely, definitely set you up for that. So you had these jobs, you tried IT for a while, you had your own business for a little while.
Right.
And then you dove into this. Where did you find the courage? Because a lot of the guests that I have on the program, we talk about how that safety zone of working for somebody else. They make the decisions, they put their neck on the line, they carry all the stress. You just collect a paycheck and you do what you were told to do, and that's it. That's a very comfortable place to be. And a lot of people get in that comfort zone and never move. How did you decide, I want more?
Well, I had a conversation. I was working as a 1099 employee. I was working as a W-2 employee, making 1099s for consulting on the side. And I had a long conversation at tax time with my accountant. And my accountant basically told me, hey, you're bleeding over here. You're not getting any benefits from being incorporated. You should really look into incorporating yourself and going to the next step of you stepping outside of the box and not being a regular W-2 employee. And that conversation really pushed me to move on and make that decision.
But that had to be scary, though, wasn't it?
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was extremely scary. I have, like we talked about, I have four daughters, you know. I have, you know, a lot of responsibility. Yeah. And it was scary. It's skydiving. It's standing at the edge of a plane and taking a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And thank God I've been carrying well.
Yeah.
You know, but I've always realized something, that even if you fail, which is not something I want to do,
right?
But sometimes it happens, you can rebound.
Sure.
And I figured that out from past happenings, you know, not all missions win.
Right.
You don't win every battle.
No.
It doesn't happen. You don't win every battle. Sometimes you got to back up, get your game plan together, and move on and try again.
Exactly.
Now, just because you fail doesn't mean you quit.
Right. As long as you learn from that failure.
That's right.
Yeah. I told my daughter that a lot of times when she was little, she would fall down and scuff her knee or something like that. If you go over and pick them up and coddle them, then that's going to be their nature, right? Anytime something happens, oh, I need somebody to protect me. We'd pick her up, dust her off, pat her on the rump, go play. Yeah. You know,
that's right.
No time for it. You have to get back up. And as long as you keep getting back up, as long as you learn something from that,
that's right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so again, where did that courage come from? Have you always been courageous like that? Did you learn that from someone?
You know, I would say no. I would say I wasn't always courageous. I wouldn't say that. I would say probably the opposite. I was always looking for the easy way out, looking for the easy way out. And I guess growing up, not being a child anymore, you know, having children and wanting to show them that there's more than just this. You don't have to go work for Joe or Sam or Sally or Jesse. You could be your own boss. They don't teach that in school.
No, they don't.
They do not teach that. I don't know about private school. I went to public school my whole life. But they don't teach that. They don't teach you, hey, you could be an entrepreneur. You could make it on your own. It doesn't exist. They teach you in school, you could be a fireman. You could be a cop. You could work for Chase Bank. You could.
Right.
But what about this.
Yeah. Take your idea and grow it.
Yeah. And my parents didn't educate me in that. My father was a city worker. My mother worked for a company. And that's just what they did.
Yeah.
You know? So it was a whole learning process. I had to learn everything on my own.
And where'd you get that learning? Was that books?
Books.
Watching other people? Yeah.
Watching other people. Books. Conversations. Yeah. Like I told you, I had a conversation with Lisa one night. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know the consulting world existed. Yeah. I had no idea. I didn't know.
Yeah.
But learning, you guys, you and Lisa, both, just from seeing what you guys did, taught me a lot. And I went out and sought how to do that from there.
Yeah. No, when you have a knack for something, why not? You know?
Right.
Why not go out and use it? And there's, like you found, there's always someone who needs that help. Right?
That's right.
There's things that I am not good at. I will always hire people to do certain things for me. Right?
Right.
Taxes. Anything having to do with math, I don't like math. I will always hire somebody to do that for me. There are people like that that say, hey, I know how to run, or I know how to do this business. I technically know what I'm doing, but I don't know how to run the office. I don't know how to set up an office. I don't know how to, you know, put in policies, procedures, things like that. There's always going to be somebody looking for that. That's, yeah, good stuff. So on the topic of courage, right? Is there a type of courage that comes easier for you?
Definitely physical and disciplined courage. Yeah. Those come fairly easy for me. I'm not really afraid of much. I feel like I will try anything. I will, you know, give anything a shot. Physical courage doesn't scare me.
Yeah. And then the discipline courage.
Yeah,
courage discipline to stick courage. To your plan. Yeah, stick
yeah,
to your plan.
Stick to your plan. This is what it is. You know, if you could regiment yourself, which for me, regimenting myself is what's good for me. It's not good for everybody. Not everyone could do it. It doesn't work for everyone. But right. For me, it's what keeps me focused, keeps me in line. I have a plan, and this is what I do, and that's it.
Yeah. No, that's good. Is there a type of courage that's a little more difficult for you?
Yeah, definitely. Empathy courage or empathetic courage. Yeah. That's really tough for me. And I think it's because of my prior EMS experience and medical background experience. If you're put through enough traumas, mm-hmm. you kind of lose the aspect of, oh, that's really a person there.
Yeah.
And they're suffering.
Yeah.
So you just try to fix the problem. Let's say someone cuts their arm off. You want to stop the bleeding. And that's what I would focus on. I'm disciplined. I'll right. put a tourniquet on it. I'll time it and I'll know what I'm doing. But I will not comfort the person that is going through the trauma,
sure.
which empathetic courage is really tough for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, in that situation, you focus on what's necessary, right? What needs to happen right now.
Right.
You know, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I use that as an example. But in general, I'm really not good at that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Something I have to work on.
Well, and there's a lot of, you know, when we talk about courage, people think of physical courage off the bat, right? That's
right.
Will I put myself in physical harm's way to accomplish something? And as a dad, I'm a dad. I'd know that. I would put myself in harm's way. Absolutely. You know, but there are other things, like you said, they're a little bit more difficult. They take a little bit more work or practice at it. Now, awesome. You did say one thing at the beginning that one job you would not like to be is a police officer because they have it so tough.
Yeah.
That's kind of empathetic. It's like, I feel for them. I can sense how difficult that is for them, you know? So you're there. I think you could,
right.
you could work on that. Yeah.
I'm there in a different light where I don't know how I would react. If I was a police officer and we've all watched the news these days, we've all seen the protesters spitting in a cop's face and throwing stones and Molotov cocktails and just this slew of stuff to these people that if you were injured, they would drop their shield and help you.
Right.
The same person that's trying to save themselves will help you.
Right.
I don't know if I would be able to handle someone spitting in my face and then that feeling. I think I would just become aggressive. And
yeah,
I don't know if I could do that.
I know.
That's a tough one.
That is tough. Yeah, I don't know how I'd.
I don't know how cops do it.
I don't know. Yeah, hats off to them. Absolutely.
Definitely.
100%.
Most definitely.
So if you were to go back and talk to yourself, 17 years old, getting ready to go into the Army and stuff like that, would you do things the same way? Would you do things differently? Would you do them in a different order?
I might do them in a different order, yeah. But I definitely credit the military for giving me the tools that I needed at the time so that I would succeed later on. Yeah. I might have done it a little bit different. I might have completed college first, then go into the military and went in at a higher rank or, you know, something along those lines. I went in as an enlisted soldier and started from private. If you graduate college, you start as a lieutenant.
Okay.
So I might have done, if I could tell myself something, I would tell that. I would say, yeah, you know, finish school, get your head together, and then go into the military after that.
Yeah. And now how about your daughters? Or is military something you would offer to them or coach them through? Or
I would definitely. I don't know if I would encourage them to do it, but I would. If they showed that they wanted to do it, I would most definitely support them. Okay. I would definitely support them. I think it's great. I think kids need it. I think, you know, you become a man, you know, especially if you're in, a situation like I was when I was a child. I was just wild, yeah, and I had no bearing. I had no one to focus me. Both my parents worked. I would come home from school, hang out with the friends on the street, smoke cigarettes, drink beer. And, you know,
yeah.
It just wasn't good. It just wasn't a good thing. But yeah, I would definitely support my children, anyone who wanted to go into the military.
Yeah. And what about being entrepreneurs? Are they showing they showing any signs of entrepreneurship?
So my oldest daughter, who's just started high school.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. She just thinking about that is tough. Yeah. She started high school. She's 14 years old, Riley. She's in a law program. She's very smart. She seems to have her head on her shoulders, and I would definitely encourage my children to become entrepreneurs. And I want to start them at a young age, because there's no education in the public school system here. You could teach your children young how this system works. This is what you do to make money. This, you could be your own boss. And, you know, maybe it's setting up a lemonade stand outside, or it's, you know, starting a book program, or whatever it might be.
Babysitting, lawn maids, right. Whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. And they need to see that you work hard, you get returns. Mm-hmm. If you work for the money, you get the money.
Yeah.
And, absolutely. And then you could hire people to do the work.
Do all that other stuff. Yeah, right. Exactly. So what's next for you? I know you're looking to hire some folks. What kind of folks are you looking to hire?
Yeah, I'm actually looking to hire veterans.
Okay.
They have a skill set that, you know, is really favorable for what I'm looking for. I know there's a lot of veterans coming home now, and, you know, people looking for work, and I think I'm going to take on a new project that might let me hire one person, and
nice.
I'd love to do it.
Yeah. Very cool. And then where do you see your business going in 5 years? Are you opening up other offices? Are you franchising? What are you doing?
You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself. One step at a time. Listen, hopefully in 5 years from now, I'm a name in medical school that when people get out and they want to start their office, oh, call Next Level Strategies. Yeah. They'll set up your office. They'll get you going. They'll find a place for you. They'll set the office up for you. They'll get your staff for you. They'll put you in and get you going.
Yeah.
You know, which is where I'm actually, I have a physician that I work for. His son is in medical school now and he's in his last year of residency, and I'm trying to get into the school to do a talk so I could talk to all these young physicians that are coming out. Because a lot of doctors don't realize that even though you're a physician, and unless you're going to work for the hospital, if you work for a private practice, you're a business. Mm-hmm. You're a business. You have to make money to stay open. You don't have a hospital supporting you.
That's right.
You're not getting that paycheck. If you don't have patients coming in, you don't have, you know, money coming in. So
yeah, just putting a sign up isn't going to do it.
It's not going to do it. No. Yeah.
Just like an entrepreneur, you have to have leads.
That's right.
Convert those leads to actual customers, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right. So I'm trying to get into a medical school to do a talk.
Good.
I was lucky enough to talk for the New York State Pain Society two years ago, which was great. I spoke in front of 200-300 physicians.
Nice.
A little bit scary. I'm not the best at public speaking, but
but it was good information for them. Yeah,
it was great. It was great. It turned into a bunch of work for me, and it's great. I look forward to doing some more.
Good. And then you mentioned something about Moscow. You were asked to come out and talk in Russia.
Yeah, crazy. One of the physicians that I was referred to also works in Russia doing some patient care over there. And he gave my number to the Ministry of Medicine.
Wow.
Really, really interesting to get a call from an interpreter who interpreted for the guy for me. And his name was Sarkov, the Ministry of Medicine. And he asked me to come out there and talk about remote patient monitoring.
Okay.
Which is, in remote places, there's not a lot of physicians. Your rural areas, it even applies to America. But out in Russia, it's a little bit different. You have these communities that are way out of touch. And putting in a physician to stay there is not likely. But they do have like a public building where the person can go in and do a Zoom visit, just like we're doing now, put on a blood pressure cuff, put on a SpO2 monitor, put on the pulse monitor and cardiac monitor, and the doctor could, you know, decide what to do. So it was pretty cool. It never happened because of COVID. COVID kicked in and it kind of got set to the wayside, but maybe someday it will.
Nice. Yeah. And so do you have any other speaking engagements lined up or?
I'm going to speak for the New York Pain Society again.
Good.
I'm speaking for them. The annual meeting this year is in October. Nice. So I'm speaking for the New York Pain Society in October.
Excellent.
And nothing else past that.
Yeah. Well, good. Hopefully more will come up. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Like I said,
I'm
hoping to get into a couple of the medical programs and petitioning some of the schools to let me talk to the new physicians that are coming up.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, it's a great way. If you can get up in front of people, the minute you stand up on that platform, you're the guru. You're the go-to person, right?
That's right.
So, yeah. Very cool. All right. So if people want to get in touch with you, want to look you up, how can they find you online?
So I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And I think it's Next Level Strategies on LinkedIn.
Okay.
My email address is nlstrategiesinc@gmail.com.
Okay. And website underway?
Hopefully. I just started with the socials, so I'm getting there.
No, that's good. Well, as soon as that information is available, I will make sure that it's in the show notes. So if people want to get in touch with you, they can reach out.
Awesome.
You
could also put my personal number in there. I left you the number on email.
Okay.
You could put my number in there. I'm always willing to take a call.
Awesome. All right. We'll do that. Well, yeah. Any medical offices out there, if you're struggling with your medical office or getting your office set up, getting your policies, procedures in place, check out Next Level Strategies. Very cool. Good job. All right. Well, that's it for me. Vincent, thank you again for coming on the show. Glad to have you on here and stuff. And we'll check it back in with you as you grow a little bit more and see how things are going, maybe you'll have that talk out in Russia again. We'll talk about
it. I hope
that.
So.
Very cool.
Good Thanks job. For having me.
All right. Listeners, hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, make sure you share with your family, friends, and colleagues, and stay tuned because there's always more coming. That's it for me, Coach Harlan, saying so long for now.